We've spent the last several decades getting more familiar with our food and where it comes from. Sure, the store shelves are still full of food products and heavy packaging made by heavy processing and containing ingredients that are difficult to pronounce. But we appreciate Whole Foods more than we did a couple of generations ago and often know more about where food comes from. This spirit is celebrated in the new cookbook, Straight from the Earth, subtitled Irresistible Vegan Recipes for Everyone. It is a joint effort of the mother and daughter team of Myra and Maria Goodman. Myra Goodman joins us. She's the co-founder with husband Drew of California's Earthbound Farm. She's appeared many times on TV and has been featured in many print articles and is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Myra, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So congratulations. I understand it's 30 years now at Earthbound Farm. Tell us about its creation.
Well, Earthbound started 30 years ago in my husband and my little backyard farm where we still live today, where I'm sitting right now. We started as a little heirloom raspberry patch, and we sold our raspberries at the side of the road. And in 1986, we were actually the first people to successfully sell packaged salad for retail sales. We were growing beautiful little baby lettuces and gourmet greens for local restaurants. And we started bagging them up and putting homemade labels on them. And that's really how our company grew. And we grew to become the largest grower of organic produce in North America. So, so it's been a kind of wild 30 years.
Did it get away from you in a sense? I mean, did you ever expect to get as big as you got?
Oh, we never did. We never did. I mean, I remember our little house, which was 800 square feet, was our first salad packing facility, and we had a little time card holder that had 12 slots, and I remember hiring my 12th employee and saying, no more after you, 12's enough, you know, so we didn't have those aspirations, but, you know, I think it was a combination of realizing that there was a real demand for our product out there, and also learning what a huge positive impact it made every time we transitioned more and more acres to organic farming away from conventional chemical farming. It really made a huge difference. So it felt like a really mission-driven company, as well as a, you know, successful for-profit company too.
Now, Myra, you and Drew, in a geographical sense, came a long way to organic farming. Can you explain?
Well, both Drew and I are from New York. I was born in Brooklyn back 50 years ago, before Brooklyn was cool and hip, and my husband was born in Buffalo, and we both ended up living in Manhattan for high school. We actually went to the same high school. He was in 12th grade when I was in 9th grade, and we didn't even hardly know each other, but we were two of the few people, really, from our high school that ended up in California. I went to UC Berkeley, and he went to UC Santa Cruz, and we met out here. So we're very unlikely farmers. I grew up on TV dinners and pizza and Dunkin' Donuts and just really crappy, lifeless food. And I think that that's why when I landed on this little farm, and it was really just going to be for a year before I went to graduate school in international relations, I think it was the contrast of the concrete of the city and, you know, the processed, lifeless food that I had grown up with, that I was just completely overwhelmed by the miracle of nature and the taste of this fresh food picked from the vine or pulled from the ground or falling from the trees. And I just really wanted to figure out a way to keep living off the farm and make a living off this little farm. And so I think that's part of what spurred us playing around with these packaged salads so early on.
As much as you've been out there in the media, and we're talking mainstream media, not niche stuff. I mean, Oprah Winfrey's show, for example. I mean, do you feel like eating healthy is finally mainstream?
You know, I do. It's very interesting because I live in Carmel Valley, California. You know, we're right near just so many organic farms, and the food that's available around me is so healthy. So I know that I'm really far away from the way that the majority of Americans eat in different parts of the country. But when I see, you know, how many people are starting to realize that these health problems that we're plagued with as a country are mostly diet related, and that when we switch our diet to more healthy whole foods, we really get healthy. And it's very analogous to conventional farming versus organic. You know, in organic farming, we don't have these, we don't have any fumigants to fight diseases. We don't have really strong insecticides. So we really have to keep our soil healthy and our plants healthy versus conventional farming where the soil is really pretty unhealthy and they use so many chemicals to fight diseases. So I'm kind of seeing that, that in health, people are starting to realize that we need to build healthy bodies, not just deal with symptoms, and we do that from eating healthy whole foods.
And healthy whole food is in abundance in the book Straight from the Earth, Irresistible Vegan Recipes for Everyone. Myra Goodman is the co-author with her daughter Maria. We'll come back and talk more with Myra about the recipes in the book and about eating good whole food in the first place when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange. You can join us at 800-838-3760 or 541-552-6782 or by email jx@jeffnet.org. Back with Myra Goodman and your phone calls and emails on the Exchange in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Myra Goodman, the co-founder with her husband Drew, 30 years ago of Earthbound Farm in Carmel Valley, California. She and daughter Maria are the authors of a cookbook called Straight from the Earth, Irresistible Vegan Recipes for Everyone. We're talking about the not just the vegan lifestyle, because these are recipes that anybody can enjoy, but also just about whole foods more generally with Myra. And you can join this discussion on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. I understand we might have some issues with reception in the Roseburg area on our KTBR transmitter there. If you're having some issues, if you don't hear me, you don't hear me. But if you hear me intermittently, may I recommend you go to jeffexchange.org and click the Listen Live link for the News and Information Service and listen through your computer or mobile device instead of the radio just for today. Myra, back to you. You were saying a moment ago about just the general approach to things on an organic farm at Earthbound Farm. Certainly, you said no fumigants and no strong insecticides. I'm curious what if there's a difference between weak and strong insecticides.
Well, I the insecticides that you're allowed to use under the National Organic Program, they're not toxic or persistent. So they tend to not be silver bullets. And also, the protocol is to really only use them as a last resort, whereas conventional farmers tend to spray a lot of their pesticides prophylactically to avoid, you know, the possibility of different pests on a set schedule.
So what kinds of control methods do you use otherwise? I mean, I often wonder this. I mean, how do you keep an organic farm from getting totally eaten by the bugs?
Right. So what's really interesting, and it's part of the reason why organic food costs more. So I'd like to talk about this because there's two things that are really important to avoid pests. One is crop rotation. So we plant crops in different places every time we plant them in general. And so that confuses the pests. They're not in the same place every time. And it also helps us with fertility and diseases because when you move a crop, diseases tend to not build up. And also different crops use different nutrients from the soil. And the other thing that we do is we try and build a population of beneficial insects. So these are insects that actually eat, that these are beneficial insects that eat the pest insects. And so to do that, we actually have to plant some of our fields with what we call host crops. So these are crops that are in there, and they're different flowering weeds. Some people plant zucchinis, depending on the crop and the pests and the insects that you want to encourage living there. And so what this does is that this is a home for them, and they're living in your field. So when you plant a crop, they will go out and they'll eat the insects. And then when you harvest the crop, they can go back and live on their little host crop. And it also serves to set some of the crops distract pests from the crop that you want to harvest. So that's some of our acreage that we plant that we never get to harvest and make money off of, but it's part of our whole pest management system.
Interesting. It's a decoy system in a sense.
Yeah, it's a decoy system, and it also is a home system. So, like, imagine if you brought in all these ladybugs to eat the aphids off your lettuce. Then you harvest all your lettuce, the ladybugs are just going to fly away. But if there's a beautiful strip of flowers that they love right next to where the romaine was planted, they'll go hang out there, and when your next crop grows, they will still be there to help keep the pests in control.
It's the ladybug dormitory.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
All right, so you got pretty easily to one of the questions I had, which is about the usual complaint that people make. Well, it costs more to eat healthy foods, but the fact is you're paying for a greater purity.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what we say is that there's a lot of hidden costs in conventional farming. So, you know, conventional farming pollutes our waterways. It's most conventional chemicals pretty much all are petroleum based. So these are non-renewable resources, whereas organic farms recycle waste products from other industries on the farm. It's also, not only is it safer for people to eat food that wasn't grown with these chemicals, but it's safer for the farm workers, for surrounding wildlife. And you know, what's been really wonderful about these 30 years at Earthbound Farm is we have seen our land get more and more productive over time. Our soil is getting healthier. Our yields are getting better, whereas conventional farmers see that their land gets more depleted over time and they need more and more chemicals to farm successfully. So you really have two very different systems that you are supporting when you choose organic versus conventional food.
Now, to be clear, this cookbook, we are talking to Myra Goodman about Straight from the Earth. This is a vegan cookbook, but you are not a vegan.
Exactly. One of the things that I've learned, so I started, you know, I was this kid from New York. I had no idea that all these chemicals were used to grow our food, landed on this farm, which was a conventional farm at first, saw all these chemicals, and I was like, you know, my husband and I were, why would we want to handle toxic chemicals, eat food grown with them, you know, and so it became my life's mission to promote organic. But then over time, I started realizing that our food choices have such a huge impact, and there's another huge impact, and that is how high or low on the food chain we're eating. And when you're eating a lot of animal products, it uses a lot of resources, it creates a lot of pollution, releases a lot of global warming gases, and it's not so healthy. So when I started realizing the huge impact it makes when those of us that are omnivores eat more vegan food, I really felt inspired to create a cookbook to invite more people to try to eat that way more often.
Seems like a cookbook might have come a long time ago. I mean, I'm sure there are probably a few people thinking, hey, what took you 30 years?
Well, I did. This is my third cookbook. It's the first one in collaboration with my daughter. And I think, I never really thought I would write a vegan cookbook. But then I started noticing that a lot of the foods that I was eating and loving just happened to be vegan. And they're in here. And at the same time, my daughter, Maria, was at college at UC Berkeley and living in this vegetarian co-op, and she signed up as her chore to cook dinner for 60 people every Sunday, and all the communal meals were vegan so that the vegans could partake. And so she was making up these incredible multi-course recipes every Sunday, and I got really excited by it, and I thought, you know, this would be a really great project is to take her creativity and all these recipes she's worked on and my knowledge of writing cookbooks and collaborate and write a cookbook together. So it's really a special project in that it is a family project.
And I gather Maria can be somewhat adventuresome, including in the kitchen. So a little bit of yin and yang with you and her.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, she's very, what was hard for her about writing a cookbook is she had never used a recipe in her life. Like, she loves the adventure of cooking, and neither of us have any formal chef training, you know, so Maria really would cook by smell and by taste and really come up with combinations that were kind of unorthodox that I would never have thought of. And so I feel like this cookbook is just so much more adventurous than it would have been if it was just mine. And it's interesting seeing the reviews, because some of the recipes are hers, some of the recipes are mine, and there are a few reviews that say, I tend to like Maria's recipes more than Myra's. They're a little more exciting and unique, you know. So it's kind of you know, as a mom, I'm proud of her, even though you know, it's nice when someone says they like your recipes the most.
The co-authors of the book Straight from the Earth are Myra Goodman, who's with us, and Maria Goodman, who's not. Irresistible Vegan Recipes for Everyone. You can join our discussion about vegan foods and just generally good, healthy foods here on the Jefferson Exchange. Our phone number, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Now, Myra, how did you make use of meat eaters in the process of finishing the recipes, or at least testing them out?
Well, you know, I think that most meat eaters really think that vegan food is not going to taste good, it's not going to be filling, it's not going to be satisfying, and I really wanted to overcome that misconception. So my husband, who is a big meat eater, just wants to throw steak and chicken on the grill, and he has a great palate. You know, every recipe was approved by him, and then I also hired a professional chef to test all our recipes before we went to print, and her husband is Irish, and she says he's never happy with a meal that doesn't include meat, and he loved all the recipes, every single one. So those were kind of our initial testers, and what's interesting, because my first two cookbooks had meat in them, a lot of the people who love my books and bought this book are omnivores, and they're saying, wow, these recipes are really satisfying and really delicious. And that's what we wanted to do, is we wanted to make people feel like vegan is not an exclusive club that you don't want to join or you're not welcome in, that we can all eat food that's plant-based more often and enjoy it tremendously.
And there's obviously a bunch of different techniques and different meals in here, breakfast, salads, appetizers, entrees, desserts, you name it, all kinds of stuff in here. But there's an interesting line before you even get to the breakfast section, which is vegan baking was scary at first. How?
Well, you know, you can't use eggs. You can't use any animal products in vegan baking. You can't use eggs. You can't use butter. You can't use milk. Mostly the eggs scared me. And at my very first try at a vegan muffin was terrible. And I thought, oh my goodness, I'm just going to make Maria do all the baking. But then I actually figured it out. We use flax seeds and chia seeds mixed with different liquids, depending on the recipe, like my brownies, which are fabulous. And my husband swears they're better than any brownie he's ever tasted in his life. Instead of eggs, we use ground chia seeds mixed with coffee. So that's our egg substitute. It binds it, and you're getting the healthy fiber of chia seeds, and we use coconut oil instead of butter, which you don't really, the coconut flavor is very subtle, but it goes really nicely with the chocolate and the coffee. And so I just started figuring out how to use these alternatives. And what's great about vegan baking is, one, you know, all of these ingredients are shelf stable. So I don't have to worry if I'm out of eggs or out of milk. I've got the chia seeds. I can have soy milk or almond milk, you know, in my cupboard. And two, I stopped eating the batter once I started worrying about getting salmonella with eggs. And so there's no food safety issue with licking the batter with vegan cookies or brownies or cakes. So it's become my favorite way to bake. I'll bake that way even though I'm not eating vegan.
You know, I have to admit some surprise at the rise of chia. In fact, I'm eating products now that contain chia myself, when years ago it was just like, oh, yeah, it's the chia pet thing, you know, chia.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're just found to be really healthy, especially really high in fiber, and they have a really nice omega-3 fatty acids, the healthy fats for you. So people are just, you know, finding, you see those drinks that are full of chia seeds, but chia seeds work great in vegan baking. And then I have this wonderful white bean loaf. It's a white bean barley quinoa loaf, and I use chia seeds in there to bind it instead of eggs. So, and my daughter actually has a great kind of spicy hot chocolate recipe, and as a variation, she mixes chia seeds in it, and it becomes a chocolate pudding. So if you don't mind that little crunch of the chia seeds, you're getting all this wonderful healthy fiber by eating your delicious pudding.
If you don't mind the crunch, I wonder though how many people get challenged more by texture than by taste as they eat vegan recipes.
Yeah, I think that's the only one. Like in the brownies, the chia seeds are actually ground really fine, so there isn't any crunch. And then I actually use whole chia seeds in the biscotti recipe, but the biscotti is already crunchy, and there's nuts in there. You're kind of looking for a crunch, so you don't really taste the chia seeds any bit differently than you do the regular crunch of the cookie.
Myra Goodman is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She is the co-author with daughter Maria of Straight from the Earth, Irresistible Vegan Recipes for Everyone, which starts with breakfast, appropriately enough. So this is interesting. Tell us about making your own granola. This is really fascinating to me.
Well, you know, actually my first, so I didn't grow up cooking. Like I said, I grew up on TV dinners and just.
The kind with the foil and everything, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, the first thing I ever learned to cook is, this was my first homemade recipe, is Wonder Bread with a piece of American cheese that you take the, you know, saran wrap off it, the plastic wrap off it, and ketchup. And that was the sauce to make homemade pizza in a toaster oven. So that was. Wait. What was your question? I got lost in remembering my homemade.
No, this is great. Down the TV dinner memory lane. I was just remembering the foil that you had to peel back to get to your Salisbury steak and soggy fries. Yeah. Though the question was about granola, making your own granola.
Oh yes. Okay. Thank you. So the first recipe that I ever made that was fantastic was this maple almond granola that's still a bestseller at our farm stand. And granola is so easy. If you don't make homemade granola, if you've never made it, it's just so easy. And so I've become this total granola fanatic. And I like to use maple syrup and canola oil as to sweeten it and to moisten it. And so really in this, the recipe in Straight from the Earth uses pumpkin seeds and currants. But really, you can use any kind of nut and any kind of dried fruit. And you basically just mix the oats and the different seeds that you want in there, with any cinnamon or ginger or any spices you want, with maple syrup and canola oil in most of my recipes. And you bake it. And then as soon as it comes out, you stir in whatever dried fruit you want. You don't want to bake the dried fruit because it'll burn. And then you have the most, and make sure you don't put it in a container until it's completely cool or it'll get soggy, but homemade granola is just so delicious and so easy. And it's great this time of year when there's so many wonderful fresh fruits from the trees and fresh berries to have homemade granola, with almond milk or on yogurt or however you want to eat it. I love granola.
As we move through the breakfast chapter and get to pancakes and soy milk is the first ingredient. Remember again, oh yeah, this is vegan, so you can't use regular cow's milk. So you mentioned a couple of substitutes. We're talking about flax and chia seeds with coffee. So you're always looking for something to make a liquid that'll help the process along.
Right. And so those are blueberry cornmeal pancakes, and they are really, really fabulous. And we use, the recipe uses soy milk, but I also lately have been using almond milk instead of the soy milk, and we use flax seeds instead of eggs, and it's a fabulous recipe. And one of the things in this cookbook is that all the recipes are all whole grain. So in the pancakes, we use whole wheat pastry flour. There's no white flour. So and they taste, they're light and they're delicious. And I think a lot of people who buy my books are realizing that you really never need to use white flour. So they're actually really healthy and they're delicious.
So, and then one of the recipes, it features some quinoa for breakfast, which basically the score right now is quinoa 3, Jeff nothing. So how do you get quinoa to behave itself and end up having an interesting flavor or at least something neutral?
Have you had bad experiences with quinoa?
I think people tell me I haven't soaked it enough or put it in stock or something to just get it.
You know,
it ready.
You don't need to soak it. I mean, there are people who want to soak all their nuts and all their grains and believe in the health benefits of that. But one thing you want to do with quinoa is you want to rinse it thoroughly because it has a bitter outer coating that I believe is just like a natural pesticide that protects it from insects naturally.
Uh-huh.
So you want to make sure you rinse it. But quinoa is actually really easy to work with. And it cooks in 15 to 20 minutes, And it's really delicious. So this recipe in the breakfast section is a quinoa banana skillet bake. And so you cook the quinoa and you saute bananas and coconut oil, and you make this wonderful mixture of the quinoa and some of the cooked bananas. It's sweetened with dates and has some shredded coconut and cinnamon. And then you actually bake it in a cast iron so it gets a little bit of a crispy top and has this wonderful toasted walnut topping. It's one of my favorite breakfasts, and you can turn it into a dessert really easily, too.
It's a very versatile grain, as it turns out, and high in protein, too, isn't it?
Yeah, it has very bioavailable protein. It has all the amino acids, and so your body can access the protein very easily.
All right, much more to talk about with Myra Goodman. Her book is Straight from the Earth, written with daughter Maria. We'll come back and talk more with her and take your phone calls and emails if you'd like to join us. Back on The Exchange in a minute 10. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Myra Goodman, the co-founder with husband Drew of the famous Earthbound Farm in California. She and daughter Maria teamed up on a cookbook called Straight from the Earth, Irresistible Vegan Recipes for Everyone. And if you're rolling your eyes, well, we've already established that these recipes were actually tested on meat eaters, among many other people, and came out with flying colors. So join us on The Exchange as we talk about whole foods generally and the recipes in the book more specifically. Our phone number is 800-838-3760 around the region. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782 by email jx@jeffnet.org. We have to get into the chapter on salads here, because especially right now when we're hovering in the upper 90s in much of our region, this is a good time to be making salads. You remark early in the book, Myra, that you do eat a lot of these. What are the kinds of things you usually put in? What are the usual starter ingredients?
Well, you know, I use all different types of salad greens. Excuse me, like right now in our little garden we're growing a few different kinds of lettuce, and we're growing arugula, which I'm harvesting really small so it doesn't get bitter in the heat. And I actually bought some radicchio and some escarole at the store yesterday. So I eat huge salads, a huge salad for lunch every day, and then usually a salad with dinner, so I mix it up. So you start with the greens, and then really on top of it, if you want to make an entree salad, you can add, I like garbanzo beans, tomatoes, cucumbers. There's a lot of different seeds that I love to add. I love hemp seeds, which I discovered when I was working on this cookbook. Are you familiar with hemp seeds?
Just a little bit, in some granola recipes, for example.
Yeah, so what's great about hemp seeds is they are really high in protein. And so I find that I really, my body likes a lot of protein, because I tend to get, you know, hungry and lightheaded kind of quickly if I don't eat protein regularly. And they're really delicious. They look like little whole sesame seeds, and they taste kind of creamy, like a pine nut, a nutty, creamy taste. So I'm a big hemp seed fan, and I throw hemp seeds on my salads, and pumpkin seeds and sunflower seeds and toasted nuts. And then if I'm not eating vegan, I love a little feta cheese or a little goat cheese.
Speaking of, we were talking about that, you said the stuff that's available from your garden right now. So the salads are going to change through the course of the year, I gather.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them you can grow year-round. It's so interesting. Like right now we have red romaine in our garden, and it's just growing really fast. So the leaves are kind of thinner, and they're a little less red, and they're more delicate. And in the winter they're going to grow a lot slower, and the leaves will be smaller, and they'll actually be thicker and more bright red. So I kind of like seeing how the plants are different at different time of year depending on the weather and the day length.
The key, it sounds like, is to have different textures and colors in any salad.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I get very inspired by what's in season, what's growing in my garden, what's available at the farmer's market. But what's really nice about salads, like I have a salad here, this cabbage carrot crunch salad, and what I really love about it is that it's a great salad all year round, because the ingredients are really simple and they're available year round. It uses romaine and red cabbage and carrots and apples as the base. And so I think you can get inspired by the season, but I think if you do all your shopping at a supermarket, you're still going to get the variety. And, you know, the reason why Drew and I thought of those packaged salads back almost 30 years ago is because we found ourselves working all day on the farm when we were selling our lettuce by the head in cases to restaurants. We, at the end of the day, were too tired and lazy to go out and harvest the lettuce and wash them and dry them to make a salad. But when we washed a huge batch and had a Ziploc bag full ready to open at the end of the day, we'd eat salads every night. And so, you know, I think it's really nice that you can go to your regular supermarket and have a really nice assortment of packaged salads. And most supermarkets now do offer a selection of organic salads as well.
You have a recipe in here for eccentric Caesar salad. What makes it eccentric?
Well, that was my daughter's recipe, and she put some curry powder in the dressing. And when she served it to us, it was really delicious. But I was like, honey, you know, Caesar has a flavor profile that people expect. We can't call it Caesar if it has curry in it. So we sort of realized that if we came up with a good adjective, that we could call it a Caesar salad. And so it's an eccentric Caesar, but it's really delicious. And that's a great recipe to make you realize that vegan food really isn't a sacrifice, because the dressing uses cashews and nutritional yeast instead of using anchovy paste and Parmesan. And it's rich and it's delicious. And I would say that is a recipe that most of my friends are now addicted to and make regularly.
It does sound good. Let's take some calls here. We have Olivia on Redson Todd Trail calling in. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Myra Goodman, the author of Straight from the Earth.
Thank you so much, Jeffrey. I hope you can hear me all right as I'm hiking here, but I took you with me on my hike.
Oh, great.
I used to be a vegan for years, and the only thing that stopped me was the amount of time it sometimes takes. And so I wanted to make a contribution, because one of the things I do to make my salads really, really good and full is I will once a week roast some vegetables like peppers, sweet potato, and I'll keep them in the fridge and I'll add them to the salad. I'll steam broccoli, add them to the salad. And so that makes it feel like I'm having more than just the usual cucumber, tomato, and lettuce. And it makes it feel like a full meal. And the other thing I do is I'm growing kale in the backyard right now, and I'll saute kale and onions and mushrooms and keep that in the fridge so that when I want to make a quick omelet, I've got something right there to put in that's already cooked. And that's my contribution.
Excellent. Olivia, thanks so much for taking us along and for calling in as well.
Yeah, I love her tips, and I think they're great. And it was really similar to what I was saying, that when my husband and I had salad ready to go, we ate it. And I think when you have those roasted vegetables, and when you, and also what the other thing that Olivia made me think about is that leftovers are so great in salad. So, you know, if you're roasting acorn squash or you're roasting potatoes, whatever you had for dinner, the little bit left over, throw it in your salad. And the other tip, I do think vegan food can feel like it takes more time, because it's so, you know, it's so quick to throw a chicken breast or a piece of fish, you know, in the frying pan. But one great thing about vegan food is it stays fresh a lot longer. So you can make a big batch of garbanzo beans and they'll stay fresh all week. Whereas if you've got leftover chicken, if you don't use it within a few days, it's going to start going bad.
Yeah, Sunday's chicken is going to smell pretty funky by Friday morning. So yeah.
Exactly. You're going to want to get it used up by Tuesday, Wednesday at the latest.
Let's take another call. We have Michael in Arcata on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Myra Goodman.
Thank you so much. I just wanted to say thanks for all your contributions to the organic and vegan movement. Been aware of your products and since about 95 or 97, and it really helped create a vegan lifestyle for myself and a lot of folks I know, and it was the only organic products available on the shelf. So thank you for that. And, you know, your contributions are going a long way.
All right. Well, thanks for that, Michael.
That's so sweet. I'm really, really touched by that, Michael. Thank you so much. That means a lot to me.
I must say to our listeners, too, since this is not a visual medium, if you just go online and look at the logo for Earthbound Farm, you will recognize it instantly. It's a well-known thing, even if it is just subliminal. And you can probably hear that from people a lot, though, that you really help them find their way to a healthier lifestyle.
Well, you know, what's nice is now you see organic in the supermarkets pretty regularly, but back 10 years ago, like what Michael was talking about, you know, I would have people say, hey, I drove cross country, and any supermarket that I went to in the middle of nowhere in the Midwest, I could get your organic produce, and it made me so happy. My husband and I and the kids actually went to Alaska like 15 years ago, and on this little teeny island in this little teeny store, they had, you know, Earthbound carrots and lettuce, and we really do feel, you know, happy that we are able to bring that organic alternative to people around the country.
That is a lot of fun, I can imagine. Let's go to Rex in Mount Shasta. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Myra Goodman.
Wanted to talk about organic cost, and it seems to me that we get more nutrition per dollar from organic foods than from non-organic foods. I have loved Earthbound for many years.
All right, so you're saying that that you get basically more of the good stuff for what you spend.
I said, yeah, yes, exactly. I sit there and look at an organic apple and an inorganic apple, and it just looks to me, it just feels to me that I'm getting more nutrition per dollar from the organic apples, just quite a bit, actually.
All right, great. Thanks for that, Rex. Appreciate it. So, Myra, to come back to you, for as long as you've been in the organic farming business, do you still eat some stuff that is not organic ever? I mean, you know, who knows what you're getting in restaurants, for example.
Yeah. I do choose organic whenever I can. But, like, there's this goat cheese that I love, this Humboldt Fog goat cheese, and it's not organic. You know, but I know about the farm, and it seems like, you know, like the goats are raised really humanely in fields that aren't sprayed. So I try not to be obsessive about it. There are certain things that I never buy if they are conventional, and mostly produce, and also, you know, milk and meat. I just feel like with the way that factory farms are conducted in this country and the inhumane treatment of these animals and all the growth hormones and the antibiotics and the concentrated of these GMO grains in their, you know, in their bodies because they're fed so much, I really do try and make all of that organic.
Back to something Livia brought up when she was talking about the stuff she throws in her salads about grilling or roasting vegetables. Well, either one. I mean, I've had some of these. They're terrific. I just have never quite gotten around to getting good at it myself. What are some of the basic principles in grilling or roasting vegetables?
Well, most roasting vegetables is really, really easy. And the basic thing is usually a 425 degree oven is what I will use. But some people do 400, some people do 450. And you basically want to cut your vegetables into the bite-sized pieces. I mean, unless you're doing, you know, some other dish. But for roasted vegetables, I will usually cut my vegetables into bite-sized pieces. And I just toss them with olive oil and salt and pepper in general. And when you put them on a baking dish, you want to make sure that there's space between the vegetables, because if they're touching, they almost kind of start to steam a little and they get soft. And what we're looking for is a little bit more of that crispy texture around the whole vegetable. So you want to make sure there's plenty of space and that you start stirring it, you know, every 15, 20 minutes in the beginning, just to make sure that you're flipping them and they're not burning. And most of them will roast in about 30 to 40 minutes, but some things are fast, like asparagus is sometimes ready in 10 or 15 minutes. And asparagus I do leave whole. So it's roasting vegetables is really easy.
All right, so 425 oven, bite-sized, except for the asparagus, oil and space between.
Yes, and salt and pepper.
All right. Let's see here. Oh, I wanted to ask about some other stuff that's good for hot days, like gazpacho. You have a good gazpacho recipe in there. How long does it take to prepare?
You know, that is pretty quick because you're really just putting stuff in a Cuisinart or a blender and you're pulsing, you know, the Cuisinart, and it's ready really fast.
It's like a dinner smoothie in a sense.
Yeah, exactly. And this one's really refreshing because it's cucumber and it's really nice and light.
All right, you have a roasted hazelnut recipe in here among the appetizers too, and I've often wondered why we call them hazelnuts sometimes and filberts others.
Yeah, I don't know. There are other things that are that way too. That, you know, you get confused. Like, isn't, you know, don't people call pumpkin seeds pepitas? I don't know if there's a slight variety difference.
All right, yeah. Mushroom burgers. You have a recipe in here for a portobello mushroom burger.
My daughter came up with that one. That's really delicious. She marinates the portobellos in balsamic vinegar and then has these delicious roasted onions.
How long a marination process, I'm curious, because that probably does add a lot of flavor.
Yeah, you know, you don't have to marinate it for all that long. I need to find the recipe to tell you exactly what she says.
Okay.
But, you know, I would never not do a recipe because you don't have to. Like, if you decide, I want to have portobello burgers for dinner, and you pick them up, and then you go, darn, it says marinate for 2 hours, and I only have a half hour, I wouldn't avoid that recipe because you don't have enough time to marinate it. I would make the recipe and then if you like it next time, go, wow, it's going to even be better if it marinates a little longer.
I found it on page 150. You want to marinate the mushrooms for about an hour.
Is that what it says?
Yeah,
okay.
And the onions for about 30 minutes. I should point out, too, that, you know, the portobello mushroom burgers comes with the yellow, the orange type on top, indicating that it is Maria's recipe, and the ones for you, Myra, are in green.
Yeah.
So the whole
yes.
book is color-coded.
Exactly. And then there's a little Maria, you know, after her head note, and a little Myra after mine. And then some of the recipes are cute because they're, you know, we have a chili with cornbread. And so Maria does the chili and Myra does the cornbread because far from, you know, I evolved from being the fearful of vegan baking person to wanting to do all the vegan baking. So I worked on that cornbread recipe.
In general, it seems like it's best to have an open mind as you approach any of these recipes because you're going to have some food combinations that you hadn't considered before. Things like a fig sandwich, for example.
Yeah, and that is fabulous. And figs, I don't know if you have them up there, but down here we have fresh figs that we're harvesting right now, and that is really a delicious sandwich. People go nuts over that.
A little out of our zone, I think, but we can certainly get them from the stores. The book is called Straight from the Earth, Irresistible Vegan Recipes for Everyone. Myra Goodman is the co-author with her daughter, Maria Goodman, and Myra has been our guest in the exchange. Myra, a pleasure to have you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It was great talking with you. And thanks to all the people who called in.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.